Blog Talk Radio.
We were just talking backstage, and you want me to get more involved. I'm like, yeah, let's clean up the damn hood. Black people and white people, poor black people and poor white people live in the same conditions. Only thing, black people paint on their houses.
It's free advertising.
But, you know, I think the point is people...
If we straighten out ourselves, people would deal with us as human beings. Don't you agree? A little bit?
Well, if your kid
wants something and his room is dirty, you say, get back and clean up your room. Then tell me what you want.
Cleanliness is always close to godliness. There's no question about that.
Thank you.
But if you live in a certain area of town where they cut off access to capital...
Yes.
And cut off access to jobs.
And you can't pick up a damn piece of paper in front of your house.
But
it don't mean that.
But pick it up.
My mother used to make me clean up my yard and the 2 yards next door to her.
But I think it's important. You should be able to pick up paper and pick up a paycheck. Pick up paper and pick up a diploma.
And we still picked up the paper. My daddy was on strike and I'm out there sweeping away, man.
Well, my grandmother used to make us clean the dirt with a brush broom. Having said that, even that is no substitute for the right to an education,
a job, and healthcare. Right, but we got to get on our own stuff a little bit.
Well,
we
got to
smack our own kids upside the head every now and then. Yo. Thank you very much.
Folks, we're late, obviously, 15 minutes late. Our apologies. We had a pretty good run without any real technical difficulties, and again, our apologies. Hopefully, you're sticking with us. This is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, or I should say just Afro Nerd. Captain Kirk is out on assignment. He'll be back festive, as usual, for Saturday's Comic Shop plus Afro Nerd, and that is, of course, the Grindhouse Edition. Folks, feel free to buzz on in. The water is warm, although it's late and warm. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Just took the longest time to boot up. I thought we got our bugs out of our system, and it seems like the bugs have returned. Maybe it's a weather thing. I do not know. Again, these things do happen. Can you guys and gals hear me? Let me just double check. Can you hear me? Folks, just tell me affirmative. I'm going to the chat room now, folks, just to see if you guys and gals can hear me. You can hear me. Terrific. All right. I hate when this happens. You know, I have my boards are up. All my information's in my face, and then everything goes black, so it's a little troublesome. Anyway, a lot to get into for the time that's remaining. I'm doing this for Delph, as they say. You know me. I had to have a little bit of Muzak to calm my nerves, so I'm going to go to a groove for a few moments, something that, it's the same dude. I'll tell you this much. James Brown is the go-to person, if you haven't noticed, for Reverend Al Sharpton. Not that I'm trying to compare myself to Reverend Al, God forbid. But I noticed that he must play James Brown. And I kind of understand that. There's always someone you just go to. That's your core person. The Oracle has Wilson Pickett as his core person. So without further ado, give me a few moments. I'm going to go to a live groove that I think you'll dig. This is All the Critics Love You in Montreux. Supposed to be in New York, but you know what he does. All the Critics Love You, Montreux. Few moments, I'll be right back, and then we'll get into it. Let's groove.
Give me this right here. Turn the lights off. We're going to do something different. Yeah. You can dance if you want to. All the critics love you in Montreux. You don't have to keep the beat. The F, the fingers, knees, and mantra. Turn around, y'all.
I needed that, folks. I needed a boogie, a piece of boogie, a piece of funk to get my mind right. Okay, you're in trouble once again. I needed that. I didn't want to listen to anything from, you know, the cast of characters, the Waka Flockas, those people. I can't do that, ladies and gentlemen. You know what I have to do to get my mind right. This is the Midweek and Review edition of Afro Nerd Radio, albeit late. And my apologies, and also season's greetings, folks. We got another week. This time next week, it will be Christmas. All right, without further ado, let's just get into the topics. It's been a while since I've done the anecdote, which is somewhat new. The anecdote's just kind of filler information, I think, that you would get the most out of, things that I find interesting. So we have the anecdote, and I haven't done a blue area in a moment. And the blue area is important because – unfortunately, we can get into the habit of just deciphering and analyzing dysfunctionalism till the cows come home, and it gets to you. It does. I mean, if you go into all these stories, I mean, there was something that happened a few days ago. I don't know if it was folks of color that committed this crime. I hope not. But, you know, listen, I'm not going to be tribal like that to constantly get into, oh, I hope it's not a black person. Anyway, white attorney, young white attorney, 30 years of age, and his soon-to-be bride in New Jersey. They were shopping for Christmas in an upscale mall, and in an effort to protect his soon-to-be bride, his fiancée, who was in the passenger seat, he was carjacked, and in some way he refused to give up his car, a late-model Range Rover, and he was shot several times right in front of this woman, in front of his fiancée, and they took the car, left him dying, and he discarded the car, I don't know, maybe a mile or two away. It seemed to be some kind of joyride kind of thing. So this young man, young attorney, on the rise, is out of here, out of the building. And it's not about him being a white person or even if it was a person of color, but it's just these circumstances make me, for the lack of a better word, insane. Just senselessness. Just taking a man's life for a damn car, and then you have to do major time for that. As opposed to just, not that I approve of robbery, I don't approve of that, but the fact that someone can snuff out somebody's life as if, A, you're not going to get caught, and B, if you do get caught, you got to do major time. You know? Anyway, we'll see if the ethnicity of the parties come into play. Whatever they may be, whoever they be may be, it's a horrific crime. But the lack of an ability to feel anything or to at least compartmentalize your crime, you know, where you know you will get out one day. You get caught for killing someone, especially if you are a man of color and the victim is a white attorney. It's a wrap for you. It's a wrap for you. Anyway, time for a good news, a.k.a. Blue Area segment. I came across this story from MSNBC, ladies and gentlemen, and it's just a good story. And I'm partial to it because I've recently acquired the penchant for wearing bow ties. The Oracle one day made a suggestion. He said, you know, why don't you start wearing bow ties? So sometimes I think I have an OCD-like personality. So when he gives me the green light, I say, oh, all right. Maybe I should wear bow ties. So I went to eBay, spent some money on some vintage bow ties. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because I just happened to wear a bow tie yesterday, and I've received quite a few compliments on it. You know, a young lady told me I was cute, which, you know, that's a given from the Africa. Anyway, luckily the captain wasn't here to hear that. He'd be all over me on that. Anyway, it just so happens I'm into this bow tie thing, and I see that a young man, 11 years old or 12 years old, is in the business, young man of color, in the business of making bow ties. He has a bow tie website, and he's a young Afro nerd who at the age of 3, he had to wear a bow tie for some function, and at that young age, he just liked it. So it became his signature thing. So without further ado, I don't want to give too much of the story away, I'd prefer for you to hear it from the young man himself. But just a feel-good story. This young man is in business, and I want to give you his information. I want you to support him if you are into bow ties, if you consider yourself somewhat of a closed horse. I remember Q-Storm shouting me out. He said he's not the bow tie type of guy. You do have to be a kind of person to pull it off. But bow ties are very sharp, man. I'll tell you right now. You see what the Nation of Islam has looked like for many years. That's their signature look. But someone who's into haberdashery, into fashion, the bow tie is a good look. So anyway, without further ado, let's get into this tie story. The young man's name is Mo, and his business is Mo's Bows, by the way, mosbows.com. Hold on.
If you think of your average CEO, you might think some middle-aged man or woman with years climbing the corporate ladder. But wait until you meet Mo Bridges, the head of a rapidly growing bow tie company called Mo's Bows. He's only 11 years old. Talented, precocious, well-dressed.
My fall collection.
11-year-old Mosiah Bridges is that and a whole lot more.
I am the NBT, the next big thing.
Don't laugh until you've heard his story. Mo, as he likes to be called, is the creative force behind Mo's Bows. He makes and markets bow ties, and in the last 2 years has sold tens of thousands of dollars worth of his own handmade and colorful designs.
Why bow ties?
Well, bow ties, they make me look good and feel good, and they just give me that spark inside of me.
How did you one day decide I would look so great in a bow tie?
Because, you know, ladies love to be cute. So I decided to just get a bow tie and rock it.
This trendy sixth grader has been writing his own rules of preteen fashion since he first put on a tie for a trip to the neighborhood playground.
I was 3, and that was when my mom started me allowing to dress how I wanted to dress.
Wait, so you would wear ties just for formal occasions?
Yes, I will wear ties to ride my bike, and I will also wear ties just to go play on the playground.
Like I said, formal occasions?
Yes.
His great-grandmother, a seamstress, taught him how to sew, and a business was born. You can buy Mo's Bows in retail stores in several states and also all around the world via the Internet.
Do you want to get the apple juice?
His mom, Tramika, refers to herself as his momager.
Thank you, Mom. You're welcome, baby.
Raising an 11-year-old.
Can you take the garbage out, please? Yeah.
And managing a budding fashion icon.
This is absolutely a family business between myself, my mom, my sisters, and granny, and, of course, Mo. We have been doing it since 2011, so for about 2 years now.
We say Mo is the CEO of Mo's Bows, but Mama is the CEO of Mo.
Mo often gives his ties fun names. This one is G.I. Bo. In a world of neckties, he's determined to change the tastes of American men one neck at a time.
No, seriously, don't chime me on. Would this work or would this be over the top?
It'll work.
Mo finds much of his inspiration at the local fabric store. He has a fine eye for detail and for what sells.
I think this one will be good.
And what works for me, he thinks, is this chevron pattern.
It's me?
Yes.
And you'll name it the Lester?
Mm-hmm.
You promise?
Yes.
All right.
You heard it. A promise straight from the mouth of the next big thing. And bow ties are just a start.
I want to start my clothing line by the time I'm 20.
So you're going to get in the fashion business.
Yes.
So we're talking beyond ties, suits,
beyond
sweaters.
Beyond ties. Like Damon John, FUBU, Michael Kors.
Moe's going to be up there with him someday.
Yes.
You got to love this kid and love his work. Check this out. This is one of Mo's bow ties.
That's the Lester.
It's the Lester. Yeah, he's a man of his words. What do you think?
You look nice in a bow tie.
I have thought about doing bow ties.
I like the Lester's bow tie combo. Like,
Mo like
Mo.
Yeah, well, he's got that cool hat he's rocking. He also sent along a note suggesting I wear this bow tie. He said with jeans and a gray blazer or suit. I went with the blue pinstripe, Mo, forgive me.
He was listening to you.
Yes. Forgive me, Mo. But anyway, great kid.
Oh, he's fantastic. I love him.
Yeah, yeah. Can I wear this the rest of the show?
Absolutely.
I think I will.
Once again, mosbows.com. I will definitely try to put up the actual video on our Facebook page. And I actually tweeted this out as well. You can go to at AfroNerdRadio, twitter.com at AfroNerdRadio. And I just wanted to support. I even tweeted him. I like to just go full force with supporting such a positive story. Again, it's a young man, enterprising, making his own bow ties. And not to be so repetitive, but bow ties, it's a pretty sharp thing to wear bow ties. And incidentally, with the newscaster, Lester Holt, during the video part of it, Mo picked out the fabric for Lester, as you heard, and he said, listen, I'm going to make this tie for you. So he wore the tie on camera, and damn, that tie was sharp. So he does have, this little man does have an eye. I can tell you right now, I do my fair share as the Oracle, something we've been doing for a number of years now. I stop buying off the rack on some things. And not that I'm a wealthy person, but it actually ends up being cheaper to get your own materials. And especially being that New York is the fashion capital of the world, there's nothing but clothing companies and textiles. You're able to go to these places, find your own fabric. If you're able to contact someone, a tailor that is reasonable, it just works out better. I'm far more satisfied with getting certain pieces made. So when I saw this young man on video and how they noted that he has an eye, because there is an eye to picking up certain fabrics and knowing what you're doing. So when he, as a kid, he picked out this fabric for Lester. I said, "Whoa, this kid really does have he has an eye." And I went to the website and his ties. I'm going to pick up a couple. I'll be honest with you. I'm going to support him, but his ties are tough. So you know how I am, and the captain, we're pretty much against some of urban fashion, not all urban fashion we're against, but the saggy pants and that kind of thing. Now, this young man sharpened up his game, and his sharpness is leading him into an entrepreneurial kind of thing. So, folks, that has to be applauded. Once again, Midweek in Review Edition, that was one of a couple of Blue Area segments I want to just go over. The call-in number, if you like, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. My apologies for starting off late, but I was raring to go. amped up, as they say, and everything went black. So these things happen. The next story you may be familiar with because it's been in the news for a minute, and the story sounds like something that would be made for television. We're talking about a young man who is a software engineer, I believe. I think that's his title. Well, anyway, this is in New York, and this young man happens to see a homeless man, I guess daily, and he sensed in this homeless man, he sensed in him intelligence. And the homeless man was asking for money, so he posed a question or an offer to the homeless man. What's the homeless man's name? I know his name is Leo. Leo Grand. Leo Grand is the homeless New Yorker. So he said, listen, I can give you $100 or I can teach you how to code. So I'm sorry, he's actually a programming executive, this young man, the young man that helped him out, Patrick McConlog, I think is McConlog. I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, but Patrick McConlog. Anyway, Patrick gave him a choice, either $100 or I can teach you how to code. Thankfully, Mr. Grand took him up on his offer, and let me read a little bit more for you for specifics, but he has an app. I'm just going to jump real quick. He does have an app that I also purchased because I love a feel-good story. I want to support this guy. This guy's on the move, and he goes through the whole teaching a man how to fish as opposed to feeding him fish. You know how that old adage. So let me read this briefly. This is from PlanetSave.com. Homeless man learns to code, creates carpooling app. When a programmer offered a homeless NYC man, Leo Grand, the choice of receiving a one-time gift of $100 in cash or instead receiving coding lessons for an hour a day, and in parentheses it says, where am I here? These pop-ups. In parentheses, plus the loan of a laptop and some programming textbooks, Leo chose to invest in himself instead of taking the cash, and the results were nothing short of incredible. Leo, who has been homeless since 2011 after losing his job and who had no previous knowledge of computer programming, learned to write JavaScript over the next couple of months with the help of his new mentor, Patrick McConlog. The fact that someone would take the time that now what is this here? I'm seeing now when you're into something important, you see blocking every which way. All right, let me skip around here, folks, because this thing is sucking big time. Let me just skip around here. Okay. It says, this is from the words of Mr. McConlog. It says, it turns out Leo is a genius particularly concerned with environmental issues. As I sat there becoming increasingly stunned, he rattled off import-export prices on food, the importance of solar and green energy, and his approval for efficient public transportation initiatives, referring to New York City's new city bike. So once again, you have a man of color down his luck, but being not – in this case, he wasn't being – discarded, and he wasn't being how can I put this? Because it's something that unfortunately happens to black folk where and other people of color as well, where you're just misperceived. So this young man who was the programmer gave this guy a shot, and he came up with this environmental app, actually, which is up this guy's alley, and he even goes further and says, instead of trying to build the next Candy Crush or Angry Birds or yet another photo sharing app, Leo chose to create a carpooling app that aims to reduce the number of automobiles on the road and in turn to reduce the amount of transportation-related CO2 emissions, hence trees for cars. So it's an environmental app. You can definitely look this up. Just simply put in your app store, trees for cars, especially if you're in a major metropolitan city. And it's 99 cents. I didn't think there would be any harm in that, so I just thought it was such a feel-good story I just want to support. So to both these gentlemen, especially Mr. Leo Grand, because he did the smart thing. Forget about taking $100. $100 would have been something just for the moment, but teaching someone how to code, hey, that's a lifetime. This guy really gave him a career. So kudos to both these gentlemen. I think that's the essence of a Blue Area segment. It can't always be about what World Star Hip Hop is about, those kind of sites. Now, I mentioned World Star Hip Hop quite a bit, folks, and I just think to myself, because I do visit the site on occasion, and I have an idea that I will share at some point. I have an idea. So that's one reason why I go to World Star Hip Hop. But anyway, when I'm there, I notice that, like, a video of Lester Holt and the young man Mo of Mo's Bows, that can't even be, it can't even fit in with that. Isn't that kind of strange on some level? I mean, their business model literally is ratchetness, lower tier methodology. I mean, it's not by chance. I mean, it really is, that is their business model. When you go there, I rarely see anything positive. I mean, not even by, just for happenstance, not for just S and giggles. Just for S and giggles, you'd think they'd have some kind of positive human interest story. And I sat there and said, wow, you know, they can't even make time between the booty shaking and someone being knocked out, some Scout game story. They can't put in a story of a young man of color who is doing something positive, or even this other young man of color, because Mr. Grant is not, looks to be probably late 20s, early 30s. This young man who was homeless, who's been given a shot for an enterprise endeavor on his own. Those two stories just can't make it on a minstrel site. And this is why, you know, I go into this diatribe, so you're used to it by now, but I have to continue with this MP3 that's on repeat. I have to repeat this MP3 file for you, because you have to understand that this is such a business, and at this point, with the gentleman that runs World Star Hip Hop, he's a millionaire. You can look it up. I believe his name is Q, not RQ, but he goes by the name of Q in Queens, and he makes a few million a year off of profiting and profiteering off of wretched culture, black ratchet culture. And there's never any positivity on there. Never. Never, never, never. So, anyway, kudos again to those gentlemen. I'm going to go to another groove. When I get back, I'm going to give you an anecdote, and then we're going to get into even more fair. It's Don Lemon is catching hell again. Also, there was a discussion. Well, actually, I got to talk to you about Suge Knight. More minstrel business. And TMZ is involved, and TMZ is insulting you, I guess not unlike World Star Hip Hop or Bossip or Media Takeout, but this one takes the cake, to be honest with you. This one takes the cake. So when we get back, I got a lot more to discuss. I got an anecdote to give you. You know what? I want to give you more Prince. You guessed that. And then afterwards, we'll get into more urban alternative, Afro-punk, black rock. You know what we do. This is Prince covering Sly Stone. Thank you for talking to me, Africa. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
y'all know what time it is. Come on, sing.
Thank you for letting me be myself again.
Come on, Giles, do something.
Thank you for talking to me, Africa. This is Royal Badness covering Sly Stone. I think Sly Stone, I mean, he's drug-addled. God bless him, but I believe he's trying to come back. He's been trying to come back for 40 years. So it breaks my heart to see him with someone of that kind of talent where you see the drugs just really have made him just a shadow of his former self. But a lot of the other of his family members are still around, and he's still around, so I think there's some kind of effort. I think even Afropunk covered this. Again, Afropunk.com, they covered that he's trying to get some kind of group. I actually read somewhere, again, he's a kook. He's trying to put a band together where there's him and the remaining band members are albinos, so just to have that kind of contrast or something. So, I mean, it sounds kind of funky, sounds kind of interesting, but I just know that he's a shadow of his former self. We understand people get older, but some people get badder when they get older. In his case, he's just not there. All right. Again, folks, midweek in review edition of Afro Nerd. Happy holidays. The captain is not here. He's out on assignment. He'll be with us on Saturday for the Grindhouse. I figure I'd give you a break from the Christmas Muzak. We will, next show we'll go into it and all the way up until Christmas. Anyway, for the anecdote, and the anecdote is something that we started a few months ago, because I'm always coming across just information. I'm inundated with information, and I love it. I probably have more of an appreciation for just incidental data than I did when I was younger. And also because we have access to it. I mean, between smartphones and even video games now. I was able to pick up PS4 and Xbox One. And my Xbox One, I haven't even taken it out. It's still in the box. But these really, they give you're inundated with information. These are media devices. Between the media devices, between your smartphone, between your iPads, between your PCs, your laptops, there's no excuse for people not to know anything. Yeah, I've mentioned this rant before. There's young folk that are glued to their smartphones, and yet they're dum-dums. This cannot be. So anyway, oftentimes I will come up with something in my head and I will explore it. So I was just thinking about slavery, and I go in and out of slavery with my personal thoughts. A few years back in New York, we had a New York slavery exhibit, New York's role in slavery. I mean, the northern colonies had slaves, obviously. We saw that with 12 Years a Slave, with that particular person, Solomon Northup. He was in upstate New York, a free man, but there were slaves around him, even upstate. But for the most part, slavery was abolished several decades in the North before the southern colonies. Anyway, I was just thinking about what is the physical evidence of slavery? What is Afro talking about? Well, you can go to libraries. Heck, you can go to eBay. I've even bought some items. You can buy slave chains. You can buy slave chains, just as you can buy for colored only signs, for whites only signs. You can do that. I have one of those signs. You can buy slavery bill of sales, slave bill of sales. You can go to the libraries, and you can see dockets of the descriptions of chattel slavery, of people being owned. You can see the owner. You can even see evidence of those slaves being insured. I believe Cigna. There's a few companies that are in business to this day that insured slaves. So there's pockets of physical evidence, but I was thinking more on the visual side. What is the visual evidence? So it made me think about photography, and I was fully aware that the photographic image dates back, just in my own head, without even doing the research. I have my own thoughts, and then I research for verification. So I was just thinking in my own head that, okay, I would think that as far as photographs or photographic evidence or the advent of photography, maybe the mid-19th century, 1850, 1860. So I said, if that's the case, there should be photographic evidence of slaves. So I've seen pictures here and there, but you would think there would be a lot more physical evidence of slavery. So come to find out that, first of all, again, this is the anecdote, just stuff that's just to put out there, and you can do your own research. I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but I just find this kind of stuff interesting. I find it fascinating. So anyway, in going into this, you'll find out there's different types of incarnations of the camera. You have the camera obscura. The camera obscura was a makeshift camera. It was the kind of thing that it would either take up the size of a room, or it might be, a fairly sizable box with angled mirrors and a pinhole. You might have seen this kind of contraption in period movies. And essentially, that type of camera would superimpose a photographic image on like a mirror, and then the person who had an interest in that image would have to basically copy the image. You'd have to do some kind of, there was some kind of drawing involved. So you'd have to draw a fairly, or trace over this photographic image. So you have the camera obscura, and then after that, which is more of an actual image, is the daguerreotype, D-A-G-U-E-R-R-E-O-T-Y-P-E, the inventor, of course, is a daguerreotype. Now, daguerreotype, if you Google slavery daguerreotype, you see all these fascinating images of slaves. And now, of course, you know, it's never going to be good in photographing a slave. But what you find out is that even then, when slaves were being photographed, because there's a number of exhibits out here. You can look for these exhibits where you see these 1840, 1850 images of slaves. They were taken for scientific purposes. So it wasn't like they were just taking a picture of a particular black person just for historical purposes. It was because if there was ever any discussions of the comparison of man or making this distinction between white men and African men and that kind of thing, that's why they would take pictures of slaves. And even then there were some pictures that might be less of a scientific type, but then if you saw a black person in those pictures, they might have been of a different level. They might have been a slave, a woman that might have been the mistress of a white farmer or that kind of thing. And you see, even then, you see the different levels of slavery. That's something that, I don't know if that's really discussed enough, but even within the slavery system, there were different types of slaves, and then the photographs indicate that. So you see some attractive black women, even in 1850, that were, you know, still owned, but they were fully dressed and that kind of thing. They were dressed of that time period, and then there were other pictures that I noticed that, going back into the science, they were, you know, near nude. No, you weren't human, so you were looked upon as some kind of scientific experiment. So, folks, without going into it too deep, simply look up these daguerreotypes, these photographic images, slavery daguerreotype, and somewhat harrowing imagery. You know, you could tell these folks weren't having a good time, obviously. Daguerreo type. Daguerreotype. Daguerreotype. I'm looking at something called Portrait of Renty. Renty. Portrait of Renty, African-born slave. Wow. And also the fact that these daguerreotypes were photographic images on tin or in copper. This is way before. If you ever seen a period Western, and you see how it takes 30 minutes to take a photograph, and it's usually a puff of smoke, and it's a whole big to do. Usually, you've seen it used for somewhat of a comic device. That is a daguerreotype. That's the early incarnation of a camera. So these are the things that float around in my head, folks. I just have a curiosity about certain things. It's because as time goes on, you start to see that people will try to discredit or try to lessen slavery as if it didn't happen. You know, we see that there are certain folk, dare I say, certain Middle Eastern countries, Iran, that will deny that the Holocaust took place. Not just Iran, and there are other, you know, anti-Semitic folk or whatever. There are folks out there that will deny that, and that was far more recent, obviously, and if it's something that really cannot be disputed as far as what happened during the Holocaust, what do you think will happen with discussions of slavery? So that's why it's important to catalog the evidence, besides the psychological scars, obviously, and they don't want to give you that also, folks. And I don't want to get into, you know what we do. We're not into victimization talk, but I am about honesty. Slavery did exist. We do see the scars, but you go beyond that, and you know that. You know that by now. All right. Now, let's go to some more, give you some more heat. I was listening to, well, where do I go? There's so much stuff going on right now. I don't even know where to go. I'm actually at a loss for words. Let's talk about Suge Knight, unfortunately. I didn't bother to get an audio clip on this because it's Suge Knight, and he's a minstrel. I don't think I need to have an audio clip for him. I think you're fully aware. Suge Knight, former Death Row CEO, Death Row Records CEO, he was asked by a TMZ reporter, in quotes, do they actually do reporting? Anyway, TMZ reporter, in quotes, asked Suge Knight about how does he feel about the term African American. Now, in some circles, folks, now this is coming from the Afro nerd who has been accused of not being a real black guy, especially during the early inception of AfroNerd.com, during the blog days when I was blogging more, when I took some conservative opinions, when I critiqued Jesse Jackson, and you see what happened, what's going on with him and his son and daughter-in-law, but I digress. Anyway, this is coming from someone whose blackness has been questioned on occasion. I don't have an issue with the term African-American. I don't have an issue with there being a number of terms to describe black folk. I think it's kind of cool not to just be pigeonholed to one terminology or one descriptor. That makes us fascinating, I think. Makes us dynamic not to have where you're just black. No, you're black and you are 200 other things. Well, anyway, when Mr. Knight was asked about the term African-American, he went into this whole thing, I'm not African, I don't know anything about Africa, I've never been to Africa or what have you. And then he says, I prefer the term nigga, N-I-G-G-A. So, wow. He thinks the term nigga is, he's comfortable with that. And he goes into, I think the person asked him about, well, what about cross-racially? And then he went into, well, it depends, it's situational. But the bottom line is, without getting into a whole bunch of rigmarole with Knight, I guess he was serious. He feels that nigga is the operative for him, operative word over African American, because African American pains him so much. So I believe another hip hop artist, I forgot the young man's name. I don't care. I didn't even want to commit that to memory, to be honest with you. Someone else chimed in, agreeing with Suge Knight, and thankfully, Charles Rittenour, a.k.a. Chuck D, he came in and said, no, this is not going to work. And I feel sorry for Chuck D because he's come out on a number of occasions where these issues come up, and he has to come in and correct the ship. He has to right the ship. Even beyond that, ladies and gentlemen, even beyond this minstrel being asked the question. So I don't understand. I'm not into determining who's relevant or not. I don't necessarily like playing that game. But in this case, I will say Suge Knight is not, even as a personality or notable, he's not where he was 20 years ago. I could see asking him at the height of Death Row Records a question, even though I probably would not have cared for that back then. But to ask him now, TMZ doubles down on this and proceeds to have a poll on the website, a poll that would be problematic if it was just open to black folk. But it would make more sense, maybe. It would be problematic if the poll were just open for black folk. But no, the poll was for anybody. The poll was for anybody as to what should black people be called, niggas, or African-American. I kid you not. We've got to do something. But then again, from the last show, when I spoke to Rob Redding, this generation is so much into Facebooking and tweeting. I don't know if there's any inclination that there would be folk that would be upset. Or if they would be upset, it would be so short. We have the attention span of a gnat. But the fact that we're at the point now, and we've been at the point, where you have embarrassing blacks, lower tiers, ratchet cultured individuals who are positioned to be some kind of spokesperson, but on the word of a minstrel, on the word of one person, they decided to make a poll as if Knight is a person of importance. So they're basing on what Knight says. To have a poll on this website, and I believe, as you know how this is going to, what's going to happen, I believe the poll now shows that, well, they think people, black folks should be called niggas. So that's a joke right there. Obviously, this is a pre-made joke. You know how this was going to work out. But the fact that Team Z doubled down on this, as if this was a legitimate question to ask from a person, as if he were legitimate, is reprehensible. And I hope greater acknowledgement is put out there about TMZ. I mean, TMZ is the white version of Media Takeout. And I believe they actually have some kind of cooperative business dealings between Media Takeout and TMZ. I think it's, is it 30-mile zone or 3-mile? I think it's 3-mile zone is what TMZ stands for, the section of Los Angeles where the paparazzi are able to do their bidding. I think Sergio will probably know this. I think TMZ actually is an acronym for, I think it's 3-mile zone. Anyway, who cares? Bottom line is, when are people going to be upset about this? And actually, I think it was Q-Storm or Tokyo Mike. I'm sorry if I got mixed up. They sent this to my attention. And Tommy Sotomayor, the YouTube personality, he went in on this. And he even made the analogy, being that Harvey Levin is the gentleman that runs TMZ. You may remember him as the legal, how would you describe him? I guess the legal expert on the People's Court. I think he might still have that gig. He might still have that gig, but he has that and TMZ. So this man is a, if I'm not mistaken, allegedly he is a gay person of Jewish descent. For him to allow this, when there was talk of, by Tommy Sotomayor, he said that, you know, imagine if Jewish folk were put in this position to make a distinction between the K word, and Jewish, the term Jewish. I mean, there's got to be some degree of decency, respect. We keep on going deeper and deeper down this rabbit hole, ladies and gentlemen. And we've got to figure out a way to put the brakes on. We've got to put the brakes on. Because you can't ask a minstrel anything. I mean, listen, white, I've mentioned this before, because I don't like to racialize everything. We've seen, and we know full and well, and there's a business model for them also. We've seen that there is a business model for white trash. We've seen it. Duck Dynasty, I think actually one of the parties said something untoward the gay community from Duck Dynasty. But Duck Dynasty, they're millionaires, believe it or not. They're very wealthy, the Duck Dynasty players. But Duck Dynasty represents that. Honey Boo Boo represents that. So there's a number of white lower tier, or there's a number of shows, a number of properties that are of a white lower tier aesthetic that make money. But I don't see the totality of the white community being affected by it. And they have other cultural idioms to go to, or cultural mediums to go to offset that type of minstrelsy. We don't seem to have it. And we don't seem to care about the fact that we do not have enough of that balance. So it's gotten to the point now where we're being clowned openly. And I would think there would be more of a hoopla of a major website putting out a poll to everyone, although it would be a problem if it was a segmented or segregated poll. If it was a poll to Asian folk, Latino folk, white people, it was a poll to everyone, should there be what's the operative word, or what would be the preferable word for black people, niggas or African-American? Now, the reason I'm going to go to the next topic, because I don't want to stay on this too long, because it pains me to talk about Suge Knight with any kind of importance. I'm always curious, ladies and gentlemen, just exactly why some black folk have an issue with the term African-American. I mean, you could say Africans in America. You can say of African descent. I know the 70s term was Afro-American, but Afro is a hairstyle. So I don't know if that was – but I never really had an issue with that either, but I just don't think it's that specific. But we know that other ethnicities have the hyphenated American thing. But black folk, using the term black interchangeably, black folk seem to have the most problem as hyphenated people among ourselves. Many of us do not like that term. And other folk who want to point to where you should just be at, you should just be American, who want you to be dismissive of your culture to a certain degree. When it comes to folks having issues with the hyphenated American thing, the African American seems to garner the most attention. And it really is a way, I think it's been understood that it is a way to join the ethnic family. That if you have Italian Americans, Greek Americans, Irish Americans, why not African Americans? Now, the core reason for me, and then we'll move along, and I'm posing this to our loyal listenership. The core reason why I don't have a problem with the term African American is because I respect the folks, my antecedents, who were African and suffered. The folks that were Africans, that are part of your lineage, ladies and those who are of color who are listening, those Africans went through hell. And out of respect to them, I can't be as dismissive, Suge Knight. Suge Knight was very dismissive, saying, I'm not African. I don't know anything about Africa. Well, you know what? There's quite a few other ethnicities that really don't know that much about their homelands either, but they still respect it. You can speak to an American-born Italian, and they will still have high praise or at least respect for the old country. But for us, we have that instant negativity toward African culture. And mind you, the Africans that come here to this day, they are succeeding. The captain is the one that pulled out that statistic about, and it's a little known statistic, but the most educated ethnic group in America are Nigerians. So you know, if I'm going to be tribal, I'm going to have to hold on to that. I'm not going to be so dismissive. And when I was going for my master's degree, so I went, as you folks know, I went to a predominantly historically black college for my undergrad and went to St. John's University in New York for my graduate degree. And I thought it was interesting then that I was there were very few black males in these classes, but the ones that were there would be me, the American-born black person, and maybe two other black people there. And as I think about it, they were Nigerians, just off the cuff. So there were three black folks in these, you know, three, no more than three. Myself, two foreign-born, as I remember, I believe they were Nigerians. But I have to respect those Africans that were whipped and maimed and lost their names and culture. I have to respect them. So I'm always curious as to, even if you're not comfortable with the term African-American, don't those people deserve to be remembered because of the sacrifice they made, at least that much? I'm just saying, that really annoys me. I don't think it can be deconstructed, actually. Can someone deconstruct what I just said, telling you that you hate being African, but what about respecting those people that lost their children, lost their limbs. I told you about, I hate to even go back into this. I hate to go back into this. I don't know if everyone heard this story, but I found this out myself. I found out about this, and I almost lost my composure. Terminology. What is the name of it? Now I'm forgetting. It's a form of slave torture. I'll get back to that. But it's a form of slave torture that is reprehensible, known for the Caribbeans, in the Caribbean. And it deals with, for the lack of, I mentioned it before. Why am I forgetting? I'll look it up in a moment, folks. But bottom line, I can tell you, I can't remember the name of it, but I know what it was. And it dealt with a slave being required to defecate in another slave's mouth. You heard what I said. The slave owner was a Thistlewood. Thistlewood. You might want to look this up. And a Derby's Dose, like a hat, like the Derby the Hat. Derby's Dose. And if a slave, this is mostly in the Caribbean, Thomas Thistlewood was a slave overseer, to be more specific. Thomas Thistlewood was a slave overseer that was sadistic, more sadistic than the average slave owner. But then I'm hearing that this wasn't that uncommon, this level of cruelty. But if a slave was accused of some kind of infraction, and it could be anything, as a form of punishment, not only would you be whipped, and then they would proceed to put all kinds of weird salves on you, peppers and salts on a back that's been ravaged. As if that were not enough, they would command, Thistlewood would command another slave to literally defecate in the mouth of the offending slave and then wire that mouth shut for a few hours. That is the living embodiment of hell. So if that's the case, I'm going to have to rep for Africans. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to be that African American, ladies and gentlemen. And I rue for those folks that say, I don't know anything about African, because it's really doubling down. I think it's actually doubly cruel to forget those people. I'm not forgetting my ancestors. I'm sorry. All right. Moving right along, I'm going to go to a clip. This is a Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A. Smith, this is a number of stories that are actually in a clump. But Stephen A. Smith responding to the great Jim Brown, the football player, the football legend, Hall of Famer Jim Brown, he made some comments about Kobe Bryant on the Arsenio Hall show. And in response to Kobe Bryant, well, you know what? Let me back up a little bit, because I know time is starting to move along. It's amazing. I can talk, folks. Let me see if I can find the original Jim Brown piece. Okay, this is Jim Brown on Kobe Bryant, and then I'm going to play Stephen A. Smith's interpretation of this thing. This is Jim Brown on Kobe on Arsenio. Hold on.
Kobe Bryant, Sunday night return to the NBA. Any thoughts on, because you and I have talked for many years about athletes along the way and what you've thought about different athletes, and I love your opinions. Kobe Bryant.
He threw Shaq under the bus.
Did I mention the word honest? He's always honest with me.
And he is somewhat confused about culture, because he was brought up in another country. So it doesn't quite fit what's happening here in America. Unbelievable athlete.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Unbelievable athlete. But in the days when we had a summit and we called the top black athletes together to talk to Muhammad Ali about his status with the armed forces. Mm-hmm. There were some athletes we didn't call. So if I had to call that summit all over, there would be some athletes I wouldn't call. Mm. Well, Kobe would be one of them.
All right. Now, again, Jim Brown, one of a number of black folk during a period of time that I have a lot of respect for. I don't always agree with everyone politically, but I cannot obfuscate or disparage or really deconstruct the sacrifice that Jim Brown. Now, Jim Brown wasn't perfect. I mean, you know, he had girlfriend issues, girlfriends being allegedly tossed around out of apartment complexes. I don't know about all that. But Jim Brown, when it came down to black masculinity on screen, comportment on screen, not taking shorts, no kind of ambiguity, shouting out 100 rifles when he was intimate with Raquel Welch. I have had that on DVD, incidentally, so it is available. I think it might be on Blu-ray, actually. I got to check that out. Anyway, Jim Brown, he was not unafraid to speak, and he's always been that way. Whether it's Jim Brown, whether it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, formerly Lew Alcindor, I've had issues with Muhammad Ali. Cannot take anything away from his historical. Bill Russell, you can think of Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier. They were cut from a certain cloth. And we're nowhere in that atmosphere with today's minstrelsy. Nobody comes close. So I have to respect what Jim Brown is saying, because I do remember reading stories and seeing documentaries of athletes coming together, not only for Muhammad Ali because of his issues with being out of boxing for a few years because he chose to be not involved in the Vietnam War on the grounds of his religion. These new players are not going to sacrifice their income. They're not going to do that. So you can forget it. And also, even they got together for some kind of business initiative for the black community. And they were not making the kind of money that could actually elicit, you know, the type of money that these athletes are making now could actually elicit some kind of change. When the monies were not there to that degree, these black men still got together. So you really can't compare the two eras. So let's go to Stephen A. Smith, sports analyst. He has his own observation of this Jim Brown, Kobe Bryant thing. And then he goes into a discussion on black conservatives that I find interesting. So hold on. This is Stephen A. Smith.
I have profound respect for the iconic figure that is Jim Brown, what he's done in the sports world, the political conscience that is attached to him. But what he said, I deemed inappropriate. I thought it was wrong. And more importantly, I thought it highlighted something, Skip, that I told you many, many years ago. I mean, many shows ago. Actually, not that many shows ago. When it comes to the African-American community, you have a plethora of individuals. For example, the black population hasn't given the Republican Party more than 15% of its vote since 1964. And anybody who is deemed a black conservative, I am not one of them. I'm a registered independent, just to get that out the way. But those that I know who are black conservatives are considered pariahs and are ostracized in our communities. And it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But this is a problem that exists within our community. Because you are from our community, everybody believes that everybody is supposed to be identical to one another. And we can't display or exercise any kind of versatility, all right, or range in our thinking. It's a problem that we have to deal with. It's an internal problem that exists, and we're going to have to handle it, because if we don't, we're going to see more Jim Browns speaking out against more Kobe Bryants, and we're going to see more Kobe Bryants retaliating against the likes of Jim Browns.
Okay, folks, got a few more minutes remaining. Again, this is the Midweek in Review edition, albeit starting late. And my apologies once again for that. But we're talking now. We're on to the next topic with, I guess, really, it's a number of things that are actually connected to this issue. One is the difference of opinion in the black community. Are you allowed to have one? I didn't even get a chance to really get into the issue with Don Lemon, although we've spoken about Don Lemon more so of late, because obviously, you know, a few months ago he came up with this 5-point plan that on his own show, and it didn't go over so well with some in the black community. They thought it likened him to being, quote-unquote, an Uncle Tom. Anytime you go into a Cosby-esque cadence, all of a sudden you're an Uncle Tom. When he talked about, just off the top of my head, I know he resides in Harlem. So he's in the black community, and he's seeing some things. I'm in the black community. Captain Kirk is in the black community. From the Honor Guard, Mr. Starks is in the black community, and he works in a black, predominantly black and brown school system. So we are seeing things on a ground level. Kim Success, as well as the great Sergio Mims, they are Chicago residents. Chi-Rac is what they're calling him now. I'm pretty sure they're seeing things on the ground level, and you cannot say anything. So there's a lot to unpack with this. We have to get into this on Saturday. We see have a call at the midnight hour, but we'll take the call to revisit this on Saturday. Caller, welcome to Afternoon. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from.
Good evening. It's Brown Beasling. I'm calling from California. I noticed the topic, and I'm reading the show description. I wish I had caught the show. Pretty interesting.
No problem. We have a
a little overtime, too. But I don't know what, you know, your position is, but it's interesting to see Suge Knight talk like this. I remember when he was standing before the judge when he was about to be sentenced for his probation violation that stemmed from, you know, the Orlando Anderson kicking situation the night Tupac was killed, you know, and he had a bunch of different charges that he was on probation on that David Kenner continuously got him out of or on probation, and, you know, it ended badly for him with a 9-year sentence, which was probably steep, but I remember him getting in front. He had a come-to-Jesus moment in front of the judge there, and I remember him saying that he would never make a record with the term nigga in it again. He felt differently then. Now, that was years ago, and maybe he feels differently now. And it's unfortunate that he would, you know, it is what it is, but there's certain things you shouldn't say to an outlet like TMZ that obviously has a real racial slant.
Well, you're right. And I think what becomes even more problematic is that these folks are asked certain questions. They're put in certain positions. And black folks seem to be the only ones that are critiqued from their lowest common denominator. Like, you're not going
Absolutely.
To go to an Appalachian. You're not going to go to – white folks are not going to go to Appalachia. They're not going to go to certain communities where one might be considered, quote-unquote, white trash. To get
well,
an opinion,
they do – well, I agree with what you're saying, and, you know, and I'm not trying to be – difficult, even though I could be if I chose to. But there are a couple of examples. You know, you have this Duck Dynasty people, and you've got Honey Boo Boo. So white trash and, you know, the hillbillies, so to speak, they're not off limits, but they don't catch the hell, and they don't catch their buffoonery, or if there isn't exposed or hasn't been exposed or trumpeted and triumphed and championed and promoted as much as with black folks, but those are just a couple of exceptions. That's the way that it is. And then I missed the whole Jim Brown. I maybe I'll listen to the archive because I always have something.
Thank you for calling.
To say.
Well, listen, we appreciate the support. We'll be back on Saturday at 7 o'clock for the Afternoon Show. So we will table some of these topics for the following show on Saturday at 7. So we appreciate you coming through.
Take care.
Thanks again for that. Thank you. You too.
Sure.
The gentleman makes a point, ladies and gentlemen, but I said it before. The issue is, how do we suffer collectively? And I don't think no one is really – the standard is not being measured by – let me repeat this. I'm very clear. The standard is not being measured for white folk with white trash as it is with black folk. No, you're black folks are just black, and there's no respect of distinction. I mean, that's the deal. Duck Dynasty, Honey Boo Boo, they are compartmentalized. We know who they are, and they're positioned in a way where they're not representative of white folk in their entirety. But when they speak to these lower-tier black folk, they're just black people. And that's the issue. All right, folks, it's been real. It's always been real. We will pick this up again on Saturday. 7 o'clock, of course, is the Afternoon Show. 6 o'clock is the comic book show. Don't miss it. We always do what we do. Daryl B will be in full effect. Going to some urban alternative groove, let's go to Erykah Badu and the Hypnotic Brass Ensemble. Rocket Juice and the Money Moon. I'm sorry, Rocket Juice and the Moon. Rocket Juice and the Moon. We'll be right back, well, on Saturday. See you guys. It's been real. Thank you.
Thank you.